In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose. As long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swarski Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this post-Christmas episode, we're going to be talking about another Chicago Bears victory. We're going to be talking a little Blackhawks, a little Bulls, a little Cubs, a little White Sox. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford Ice Hogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford Ice Hogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You could see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Season is going on right now, so make sure you head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing good. Had a very Merry Christmas, and I hope that you had a very Merry Christmas as well.
I did too, and I hope all of our listeners did as well.
Absolutely.
And weird thing is the Spotify rap thing that everyone has on their Spotify. I looked at it for the podcast. And we almost doubled the number of Spotify listeners since last year.
All right.
Which is cool.
Well, thank you to all the listeners out there. And, you know, here's to another great new year ahead, because next time we'll be talking, the episode after this one, it'll be 2024. So we're really happy with people who reach out and say they listen to us. I got some friends, some people at work that listen to us, and I'm really, really happy for their support all the time. And, you know, all the support people that message me or you that listen to the show. So, you know, we're really appreciative of it. We're glad that you listen to our shenanigans and, you know, we have fun with you guys. So please keep reaching out to us and ask us questions, give us things to talk about. We're more than happy to do that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So we got another Bears victory, and I think most of us were expecting the Bears to beat the Cardinals.
Yes.
And the Cardinals don't have a good record. And I know it's a tale of two different teams when they have Kyler Murray in versus, you know, Josh Dobbs or whoever else. But it was still a team that we expected to beat, that we have a better roster than. And you know, we were expecting to win this game. And started off really well. I mean, that first half was a doozy. That was one of the better first halves I can remember.
Yeah, and, you know, just first an honest opinion here on the game is, as you said, I, like you and many others, expected to win this game. You're at home. You're playing a bad team. And I do still think Kyler Murray is capable of being very good. I think he's, you know, shown enough to give us a reason to believe in him. And he's obviously coming back from injury, but like you said, the overall roster just is not very good. And I mean, really my honest thought, Sean, is this game didn't really change anything in terms of the way I think. It didn't really move the needle for me. To me, they just beat a bad team. And like you said, the first half was great. You had a great connection with Justin Fields and Cole Kmet. You know, that was cooking really, really nice. You had a few shots downfield from Fields to Cole Kmet. And then you got to see Khalil Herbert look more like Khalil Herbert again. He had some explosiveness that we really haven't seen from him since he got injured. So that was all really nice to see.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us had been concerned about Khalil Herbert, him pre-injury, him post-injury before this game did not look like the same guy. And you really started to be like, okay, is there something wrong with him? Is this a lingering injury, or is this just him getting back into the swing of things? And it turned out that he looked pretty good. And I'm hoping this is not a fluke and that we see for the rest of the season him look good again, because, you know, if he doesn't, that puts the Bears in a position of probably having to draft somebody. And I think if he's healthy and, you know, Deontay Foreman, I think, is worthy of bringing back, and you have Roschon Johnson, I think you You are set at the running back position for next year. And then you worry about the year after, when that comes.
Yeah, I'd love to not have to worry about using a draft spot for that. And yeah, I mean the last two games, I'd love to see some heavy Khalil Herbert running. I got some thoughts on the play calling and everything later, but I mean with the run is I felt like you were looking really good with the run, and obviously you were, Justin Fields was doing things with his legs all game long, and obviously in the first half, you had Justin Fields throwing downfield and he threw a touchdown to Mercedes Lewis, a really nice double fake on that because looked like they were handing off and, he kind of drops back and everyone's kind of wondering what's going on. And then he rolls over and he finds Mercedes Lewis wide open in the back of the end zone, which is kind of weird to think that Mercedes Lewis has more touchdown catches than Robert Tonyan. And Mercedes Lewis is just kind of your veteran guy out there. And,
He's your
I,
blocker. He's a
right.
he's basically a glorified offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Where
And hey, he got wide open in that end zone, the back of that end zone.
I'm gonna say, a bigger picture thing here is I feel much better about where this team is from a roster building perspective.
I agree. Listen, we'll get to the quarterback in a minute, but in terms of this roster as a whole, I completely agree because I think the defense is looking good. I mean, legit looking good. You saw how well Kyler Gordon played.
Yeah. I mean, Terrell Smith looked good. Jalen Johnson looked good. Kyler
Montez
Murray,
Sweat continues to look good.
all four of your cornerbacks looked good. And you had Montez Sweat is looking good. Those linebackers are looking good. If you're Ryan Poles, you're starting to build. Think about this is when Ryan Poles came in, he did a complete teardown.
Which is why last year we were understanding of all the losses.
Yeah, he bit, but Rome isn't built in a day. You had absolutely nothing, and you brought in, and you started with no first round draft pick. So his first draft, he had no first round draft pick, and he had to do a complete teardown and get rid of some salary, and had a lot of dead cap money, brought in a lot of talent for year two, made some trades for the future, and then made some mid-year trades, and you're starting to see where this is going. Obviously, there's some holes, but I don't think there are any glaring holes, okay, let's take that back. Last year when going to the draft, you're like, there's every position is up for grabs. This one, you're like, okay, we need a center.
Yes.
We need more wide receiver help. And then everything after that is kind of a luxury pick, not a need pick.
Well, right, but the quarterback is the biggest controversy, obviously.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this is what were the numbers that before the season started, we said we would like to see from Justin Fields to be okay with year three?
I mean, I think we were thinking like 3,500-ish passing yards, maybe 28, 29 touchdown passes.
Okay. And so I was thinking like 3,200 to 3,300 passing yards with about 800 rushing yards, 27 TDs. And, he missed several games, four games this year. If you extrapolate the numbers he has now on a per game basis and extrapolate it over 17 games, he's at 3,300, over 3,300 passing yards over 900 rushing yards and 23 touchdowns.
Passing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, not counting rushing touchdowns.
No, passing. Yeah. So honestly, those are in line with what we were like, that would be what we would like to see from a third year growth. You know, there have been complications along the way, but I'm at the point now, and I know there's a lot of controversy, but I am firmly entrenched in the, you keep Justin Fields and you build around him with a new offensive coordinator. I think that's, and that is not knocking Caleb Williams. I have not done a deep enough dive, but from what I've seen, yeah, he looks talented. But when you pick somebody with that number one pick, and you have to compare that to all the draft capital you would get from trading it away, he had better be a savior. And I know, like, Danny Parkins will say, you know, you need to find that quarterback that, you know, like a Patrick Mahomes, but they just don't.
There's no guarantee that's what you're going to get in Caleb Williams.
Yeah. I mean, all right. The last guy that everyone was like, this is the unanimous number one pick. This is the guy. This is, you know, going into the draft, there's no question about it. This is the number one quarterback. And that was Trevor Lawrence.
And he is not blowing me away.
No, I'm not. He's, you know, I'm not shitting on him, but he's also not been, you know, an elite quarterback. He's been fine, but because they have such a small market, nobody thinks about Jacksonville. He doesn't get, you know, shit on like Justin Fields does.
Right. He's not in Chicago, New York,
yeah,
you know, New England, Philadelphia, yeah, or even Los Angeles.
So I bring this back to that. If you were to draft that guy and he's no better than Justin Fields, you go, okay, well, you know, we could have built around Justin Fields with all this extra draft capital for trading that pick and really, really put a good roster around and won, you know, that way. I don't see the value in taking that risk when I think Justin Fields is capable. You see the long ball he can throw. You see how many of those plays, those touchdown plays, aren't because of the play design. You know, there Luke Getsy, it gets a touchdown on his stat sheet, but that touchdown to Mercedes Lewis, that was 100% Justin Fields.
It was.
That was not a touchdown without Justin Fields. And I know there are things that Justin needs to do better, but
some of those progressions are just way too damn slow. They're just too slow.
Yeah, fair. But also, when you start looking at the all 22, sometimes you look and go, all right, like he had to go through his entire progressions and then back, and there's nobody open. And what I would love to see is just build in a better check down system.
You know? And I mean, here's the thing. If you're talking check downs in the middle of the field, that's not as much what I'm worried about. But we've seen the plays where Field tries to get that quick slant, that quick pass right at the line of scrimmage. And it just that just needs to come out quicker. And it just doesn't seem like any progress was made. We saw it on the first drive of the game where it just that needs to come out quicker.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that. I will agree with you. But I'm not saying Justin Fields is perfect. I'm just at the point where I see it. It took watching Patrick Mahomes under Matt Nagy to make me feel more confident in Justin Fields, because I see how different a play caller with this, the, you know, like there that Mahomes Chiefs system has not changed his entire career. It's Andy Reid's system. It's just a different guy calling the plays, and you see what a difference it is between Eric Bieniemy and Matt Nagy. And now you're nobody's going to shit all over Patrick Mahomes and saying that he stinks. They're going to say, man, Matt Nagy really stinks. Is Justin Fields doesn't get that benefit of the doubt. We see how bad Luke Getsy is, and nobody is coming to the aid of Luke Getsy. And you're like,
there's
okay.
More bad play calling again in, at the end of the first half and in the second half.
Absolutely.
You're running wildcats. I mean, and even the announcers are like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, it is atrocious. And I'm at the point is you take those three first rounders plus some and you build your roster with Justin Fields and a new offensive coordinator.
Will they do that though?
I don't know.
Justin
know the
Fields is not Ryan Poles' guy.
He's not. He's not. But I don't think Ryan Poles is so vain that he's going to be like, well, I need my guy. I think, and I'm going to put this, I'm going to couch this way too, is I think if you decide you are going to draft Caleb Williams or another quarterback and part ways with Justin Fields, I think you have to part ways with your coaching staff too.
Yes, you have to. You absolutely have to. I think you have to regardless.
I think you do too. And the only way Matt Eberflus survives is if Justin Fields survives too. Luke Getsy has to be gone.
No, that has to change.
He's far and away of that three-headed problem. Luke Getsy is far and away the most egregious one needs to go. But
and you need a new defensive coordinator. I think you do, because here's the thing. I question this. If Eberflus is very focused on calling the defense, is doesn't it have to be hard to call the defense and be a head coach?
I think so.
I mean, it just, you know. But again, with Eberflus, you lost three historic games this year.
I don't think he survives. What I'm saying is if he did, it would be, you would have to keep Justin Fields because you can't keep this cycle. We keep talking about this Bears cycle of bringing in a quarterback and with the lame duck staff. It doesn't work out. You already have the quarterback, so you bring in a new staff to improve the quarterback. When that doesn't work, you bring in that coaching staff's new quarterback. When that doesn't work out, you get rid of the coaching staff to make the quarterback that you brought in. So it's, you never align the coaching staff with the quarterback until it's already too late. Is, I think if you are going to start fresh with a new quarterback, you have to start scratch with a new coaching staff. I just think you have to.
Here's the way I see it. Here are the scenarios. If they get a new coaching staff, but Justin Fields is still their guy, I'll accept it. If they clean house and say, we're going new quarterback, new coaching staff, and it's a legit coaching staff, I'll accept it. I will. It's, you can't keep the same coaching staff. That is a deal breaker. That is an absolute deal breaker. I mean, if Ryan Poles wants his guy a quarterback and he feels like he can hire the right coaching to do it, I'll always be weary of any decision the Bears make, but I can accept that for the time being, even if I'm not going to be super optimistic about it. Now, with Justin Fields, Sean, I just wish he'd be more consistent. I just wish he could put together a full game. I really do. Because that second half, I know he didn't have Cole Kmet, and I know DJ Moore is hurt. He did great things with his legs, though. I mean, he was really doing great. That juke that he did, that pump fake, what he could do with his legs is amazing no matter what. He turns negative plays into positive plays. But again, we saw a terrible turnover late in the game. Again, We can't pretend that that's not a problem. I mean, that was a terrible pick.
Yeah, that was a bad
pick. He did
pick.
Not pass well in the second half because he threw a deep ball to Velus Jones, and I get it. He's not the ideal guy to throw a deep ball to, but that wasn't a good throw. It went out of bounds. It was just not a good throw. And I know his deep ball is usually pretty good, but I want the consistency. I really want the, because he shows the flashes of being really good. And I really like him. I really, really like him. I want nothing more for him, to him than to be the guy.
I would just like to see is when you have a hobbled DJ Moore and Cole Kmet is out, and I'll talk about Cole Kmet in a minute, but you have a Darnell Mooney who is playing like he just doesn't care about having a new contract. He's in a contract year and he's just having an abysmal season.
Yeah.
You know, and you just got scrubs and nobody's through you're throwing to, and you are handcuffed by the inconsistent play calling of Luke Getsy that can't get in a rhythm. I'm not going to be an apologist for Justin Fields because he does need to be better. But
and I don't want to be a hater either, because like I said, there are things that he can do that are just incredible.
I mean, just think, though, is how many people were shitting on Josh Allen the first half of the season, and they fired that offensive coordinator, and now he's playing in God mode. You know, that guy is in cheat mode.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to him, though, he's a proven commodity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But we saw how, you know, nothing changed other than the play caller. The same systems. Mm-hmm. It's just the play caller. I think Justin Fields is a guy that you have to get him in a rhythm early in the game and then early in the second half. You've got to get him in a rhythm. And if not, when he's in rhythm, you see consistency. When he has success, you see consistency. It's when he is pressing, that's when you see bad things.
Yeah.
And
I do believe if you gave him a great coaching staff, he could do some really amazing things.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, there are definite things he has to improve on, but this is not the coaching staff to do it. And, you know, the thing about Caleb Williams is we're going to have the same issues. Ball security. Got to throw the ball away. You know, there's the same things. Having consistency, struggling against top tier defenses. Like, those are the same things that Caleb Williams has. And I'm not, you know, I just... We have to be prepared that
there's no easy surefire answer here.
There's no, I mean, if we all knew Patrick Mahomes was going to be Patrick Mahomes, he would have gone number one overall.
Correct.
But he didn't. Nine teams passed on him.
Tom Brady, sixth round. We've heard that ad nauseum.
Yeah. Josh Allen went, I think Josh Allen was like 10. Ben Roethlisberger was like 12. Like, those are quarterbacks that are like, oh, they're talented, but there was a reason that they didn't go number one overall. Quarterback is really hard to evaluate. Really hard.
Wasn't Alex Smith taking over Rodgers?
Aaron Smith was number one overall.
Yeah.
Alex Smith, number one overall. And you know what? If you gave me the Alex Smith, the end towards the end of his career, you're like, okay, if you extrapolate that over a career, you're like, that's a pretty solid career. And it just, he had to be in the right system for his skill set. And he wasn't for the early parts. You know, Aaron Rodgers, I remember that draft. I think he went 24th and he was there, and they moved him out of the green room because they kept showing him on TV. When will Aaron Rodgers get drafted? Oh, fell again. Now I see he's probably going to fall at least four more spots until this. It went, I think, to 24. And, So it's they went in the first round though, so you knew there was talent there, but you didn't know what there would be. It's the same as you see these like five-star recruits coming out of high school and they go to Alabama and they never play a game because they're not as good as these 3 and 4-star recruits, because every level you have to be able to keep growing. You can't just stop your growth. If you can't be, I was the best college quarterback, and then just go into the NFL and not grow and expect to be good. Like, you just have to have that fire and the ability to keep growing, and you can't measure that.
No, it's really hard, 'cause, and again, like that's why I say there's no real answer here. I think if you saw more consistency in the second half of games from Justin Fields, there wouldn't be nearly as much controversy. And it's just for me, it's like I just sit here like, man, look at all these good things that he does. If he just irons out this and this, and maybe with a good coaching staff he does, because I
I
mean,
mean,
he's crazy talented.
we see the difference in play calling though too in the second half. You watch those play calls. My concern more is those fourth quarters, as
Right. The
I want.
fumbles, the intercept, yeah.
Right. And the Bears never do him any favors. It's always in a, oh my God, he's got 22 seconds to march, and oh, they punted and it was field or downed at the 3. And you're like, oh, okay, here we go. He, and like I said, is you put him in a position where he's really pressing and putting everything on his shoulders. That's where he hasn't come up big. I think you have to have a system to support him, and he can make every throw. He can make them all. You just have to put him in a position to support him and build around his skill set. Is you're like, oh, well, he didn't do that great. All right, well, what's he good at? Throwing on the run. How many times did you have him throw on the run that was a designed call to throw him on the run? None. Oh,
That
okay.
drives me nuts. That
Yeah.
drives me nuts.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You put him in a position where he's got to go, this get this fourth down conversion. Oh, why didn't you get the third down conversion? Oh, we decided to do a wildcat out of the shotgun. Like, okay, all right. There we go. It's like it just it he's not going to be the transcendent quarterback, but you have to put him in a system. And there's a lot of I don't think there's very many transcendent quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes can be it. Josh Allen can be it. Lamar Jackson can be it. But most everybody else, even the good quarterbacks, you need to have some sort of structure. And it's wild that Justin Fields, doesn't get the same benefit of the doubt of what's his name in San Diego. That dude,
Justin Herbert.
Justin Herbert, has not won anything, and he's been injured every season. But because he's thrown a bunch of 300-yard games, that somehow magically makes him like elite. All right, okay, well, win something then. Like, that's the ultimate measure, win something. And so I just think you take those 3 first-round picks and probably a couple seconds or thirds, and you run with it.
And I'm okay with it. If they get a legit coaching staff and that's what they do around Justin Fields, I'm okay with it. Trust me, I am. I am not sitting here praying that they get rid of Justin Fields and trade Caleb Williams. Now, if they did do that and I felt like there was logical reasoning behind it, I would be okay with that too. But you know what? If they do what you were saying, then yeah, then but again, you have to have Luke Getsy cannot be calling plays next year. It just, he cannot be. That
And
that's a deal breaker.
the thing is you when you if you draft a Caleb Williams, it doesn't solve the issue of, man, who's wide receiver two. It doesn't solve that issue. And you don't have an early second round pick. You don't have a second round pick at all. You traded that. So you're relying on what, third, fourth round wide receiver? Like, your draft gets pretty hollow if if you draft Caleb Williams. And you're going to have to find, you're going to have to find some miracles in free agency. Overpay a wide receiver. You know, try to trade for somebody. If you keep Justin Fields, you could draft that first round wide receiver and then you've got your own pick to, you know, to bolster everything. So I just think it's a smarter move, and you know what you got, and the grass isn't always greener. And I keep hearing people going, man, you know, the Bears, if they would have kept that number one pick last year, they could have drafted CJ Stroud.
Okay, I truly believe there was no scenario where they were considering drafting a quarterback next year. They were trading that no matter what.
Yeah, but I'm saying is that's such a disingenuous argument, because nobody was picking CJ Stroud to be drafted over Bryce Young. Nobody.
Bryce Young ain't looking good.
No. So all these same people that are like, oh, got to drop Caleb Williams, a lot of those are the same people last year that were saying, trade Justin Fields or cut Justin Fields and draft Bryce Young. And, you know, those receipts are still on Twitter. Just got to dig for them. So, again, just because the quarterback goes number one doesn't mean they're a number one quarterback.
Yeah, it's a gamble.
Yeah. Let's see. Going back to this game, Bears looked great in the first half, came out in the second half, and everything looked flat. Luke Getsy just tries to get too cute with play calls. The defense could not tackle James Conner. And you got a touchdown that was completely aided by poor refereeing.
Yeah. So I don't that was bad. I got a question for you, and I want to hear your opinion on this. So I was watching the first half of the game at a restaurant with my parents. We went out on Christmas Eve night to a really nice Italian restaurant that we love very much, and they had the games on TVs. And remember those last two drives at the end of the half where they just stalled out and had to punt the ball away?
Mm-hmm.
And it was very pass heavy. Here's my question. Why wouldn't that not be a spot where you feel good about just pounding the ball down their gut?
There was one run play call that just, it was that short pitch in the inside, and it was getting like 8 yards a carry, and they just stopped going to it.
Right.
Completely stopped going to it. It's weird. Luke Getsy has no problems going to a well and just keep going until it is bone dry and then still going to it. But when a play is working, better not call that play anymore, because they'll know it's coming. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. And I mean, wouldn't you think that, I mean, you were doing everything effectively in the first half. You were seeing Justin Fields able to throw downfield, and you were running the ball. You saw the explosiveness of Khalil Herbert that we were talking about earlier. Again, why not just on those last drives? Why not just pound the ball? At the very least, you just run out the second half.
Yeah.
I mean, and again, the Cardinals, at that point, the Cardinals already got a touchdown, so it was 21-7 at that point. But heck, you could have pounded the ball and maybe even gotten a field goal range. I mean, I just, again, it didn't cost them the game, but it's just, it's one of those things where you just scratch your head thinking why.
Right. Is just pound the ball, shorten the game. The Eagles do it. The Eagles have elite wide receivers, and they will go deep on you, but they will pound the ball when they have to. That Giants game yesterday, Christmas Day, it got way close, and at the end they got the lead and they're like, you know what, we are just going to hammer this. And they pounded the ball on the ground and just grinded that clock down. And it forced the Giants to take timeouts. And that's what they're able to do, is if controlling the line of scrimmage and being able to run the ball sets them up to be able to pass, and they have the ability to. They don't pass to set up the run. The Bears have a good running offense. They just need better play calling. Is line up in the eye and just pound that ball, run that clock down, learn how to protect your lead. Give your defense a breather. Get some first downs, drive the clock down, and then punt it and make them drive the whole field against a fresh defense. And that's how you close games out.
And we know the Bears are not good at doing that.
No, they're not. And again, you had another game where nobody took accountability from the coaching staff, and it drives me crazy. And I don't know how this deep into it, you have a coaching staff that just doesn't take responsibility when something goes wrong. They're right there when things go right, but they are not there when things go wrong. And it drives me bonkers.
Did you hear what Ryan Poles said before the game, talking about how they need to close things out and kind of calling out the coaching staff a little bit?
I heard people talking about it. I didn't hear it with my own ears, though.
Yeah, I just saw the quote online. I didn't actually hear it, but I that kind of perked my ears up a little bit. And also, a lot of people were talking about the play where Justin Fields was yelling over at the sideline to Luke Getsy. You saw that, right?
Oh, I definitely saw that. And there is those two, they can hug each other all they want. I don't think they like each other. And I don't think they should on a professional level. On a personal level, maybe the things are fine, but on a professional level, playing football, coaching player relationship, that is not good. And you, no matter what they tell me, I know it's not good. You can Justin has already called them out once this season, and you saw him call him out on the sideline. There's not they're not on the same page. And I'm going to say it again is if you have a player with an elite skill set and you can't make it work with that skill set, and you're like, well, I need a player with a different skill set, then your offense stinks and you're not a good coach. You need to be able to adjust and make things work. Lamar Jackson doesn't regularly throw for 300 yards, but guess what? He's probably going to win his second MVP award.
Boy, is that Ravens team looking good or what?
Yeah. And, Lamar Jackson doesn't need, you watch him game in and game out. He's not the same guy as like a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen, but he gets it done. And I think he's got a very similar skill set. I see Justin Fields progressing to be that Lamar Jackson type. And Justin Fields is a better runner than Lamar Jackson, which is crazy to say. And coming out of college, when they both were coming out of college, there's different time periods, obviously, but those two at that point in their career, Justin Fields was the much better passer and much worse runner. And they've reversed those roles. And, I think Justin Fields, that's his ceiling is Lamar Jackson. And that's not a bad ceiling to have because he's going to be a two-time MVP. So that you just have to find somebody that's willing to build the offense around that skill set. You can't go in there and run, a pocket type play where it's a really complicated, like a Jon Gruden offense is not going to fit Justin Fields or Lamar Jackson. You need to build it around them. And also just because I thought the name came up is don't be shocked if Jon Gruden is not the next Raiders head coach.
Oh boy, we're gonna go through that, huh?
I have this feeling in my gut that they're gonna bring him back.
Sorry, come back.
I mean, I don't think they. I think the Raiders owner, Mark Davis, I think he got bullied into firing him. I don't think he wanted to, They're still friends. They're still close. I think he's going to bring him back.
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised either. I mean, I've trained myself to say never say never with the Raiders.
Oh, that team is wild.
They are. They go from getting shut out in a game to scoring 60 plus against the Chargers. And then here they go on Christmas Day going into Arrowhead Stadium and beating the Chiefs.
The Matt Nagy effect.
Yep, exactly. You know what? Dare I do something real quick, Sean? I'm going to give Luke Getsy one compliment from this past game.
Okay.
I think he actually utilized the keeper very well in this game.
You know what? He did the design run for
Yes.
Fields. Yeah, it actually worked. You're like, whew. But this is the first time all season long that we've seen it work.
Well, it was in a logical spot. You're like, okay, it's like a third down and a few yards to go. You're not doing it like first and 10 when he would try to do that last week. You're actually seeing him like, okay, it's you got short yardage to go to the sticks, and you were able to line your line up to make sure that the blocking was good. It was actually utilized very well. So I'm gonna give him that, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, otherwise the Bears got the win, and it wasn't a fluke win. They've outplayed them the whole game, and obviously there was not perfection, play calling gaffes, some player gaffes, but all in all, you're like, okay, you got a victory. Winning in the NFL is hard, and you take a win wherever you can get it.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to win on a holiday. And again, did it move the needle for me on a lot of things? No, but I could, like you said, I said, okay, you're seeing areas of the roster where you're feeling legit good about, and you're not the absolute dumpster bottom of the barrel that you were at the beginning of the year, where it looked like you might not even win a single game. You're able to go out against these inferior opponents and beat them, but
I want to put it in perspective like this is the Eagles are much better than the Bears,
they
and
are.
the Giants and the Cardinals are probably on par, and the Eagles had to withstand a drive that would have tied it up with an interception in the end zone. So they had to get an interception in the end zone at the end of the game, at the last play of the game, to save that victory against the Giants.
Sure.
And
And didn't the Ravens lose to the Cardinals this year?
they did. So it's, you win a game, you win a game.
Yeah.
I don't want to make overcomplicate it than that. It's winning a game is big. You can't compare anything. Is the Chargers kicked the Bears' ass? The Bears kicked the Raiders' ass. The Raiders kicked the Chargers' ass. Like,
And
there's no
beat the Chiefs.
the math doesn't add up. It's the NFL. So all you can do is win games, and
They did.
then they won, and they kept that very, very, very small playoff hope alive. And we all know that they're not going to make the playoffs,
Right.
but if that small hope keeps them motivated to play hard and go out there and play these games, cool.
Yeah, then you just got to go out and win.
We're not at the point now where we have to worry about, oh man, is the getting a win here gonna hurt our draft stock? One, we've got the likely number one overall pick. And
Aren't we, don't
two,
we just need one Panthers loss now with that big New England win?
yeah, it's if the Panthers lose at all, they've locked up number one. The Bears have locked up. And honestly, if they win, if they win both games is when it gets scary, because then suddenly they could drop to like fifth or fourth. But
Even with strength of schedule.
so the strength of schedule kind of flipped.
Yeah, I know.
It really. So if you're looking at strength of schedule currently, and this also will change, so the the lowest or the worst pick the Panthers could get is fourth. Strength of schedule right now is 522 for Carolina. It's 518 for Washington, 522 for New England. It's 561 for the Cardinals. So they, even if they win a game, if they win one of two, they get the Bears will get that number one pick. And
don't they play Jacksonville next week who might not have Trevor Lawrence?
They will play Jacksonville and Tampa.
Well, Tampa's got something to play for.
Yes. So we will be rooting for Tampa. We'll be rooting for Jacksonville too. But
we had to root for the Packers this past week.
And
who
they almost
barely,
blew
who almost blew it.
Yeah. So yeah, just need them to lose one more game. If it comes down to that final week, I will be sick to my stomach.
He'll be Bills fan puking the entire time. Just
yeah. And you know, I'm also rooting for, you know, obviously rooting for Washington. If Washington and New England win another game, then that locks it up too. Well, it locks up top two pick.
Right.
Washington, though, they've got San Francisco and Dallas. So I don't think they're winning. New England has Buffalo and the Jets. They could beat the Jets. Not beating Buffalo.
I was really hoping the Commanders would pull off that comeback they had against the Jets.
Oh, I know. That would have been so good. And Arizona has Philadelphia and Seattle.
Well, I mean, Philadelphia is playing for seeding, right? And then Seattle's obviously in the playoff mix.
Yeah, so I don't picture any of those, Arizona, Washington, or New England winning again this season. So we need Carolina to lose.
Yeah, we do. We really, really do.
That win against Atlanta really screwed us.
I know. All Atlanta had to do was not lose that game, and we'd be golden.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, I know. All I could think about after that Patriots win is like, man, if Atlanta would have hung on to that one game, we'd be really celebrating right now.
Oh yeah, because we'd be locked up.
Yeah,
there'd be nothing. We'd, you know, we knew we'd have number one going into, you know, with the loss this week. Woo, number one. So yeah, we'll be rooting hard for Jacksonville.
Who just brought in former Bears quarterback Matt Barkley from the Giants practice squad. I didn't even know he was still playing.
Cool.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I'm looking. Trevor Lawrence said his shoulder is bothering him, and he's got a sprain. So,
either he's not going to play or he's going to play and it's not going to be very good is my fear.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how good he's got to be. Let's see how the playoff picture looks for the AFC. So that, I mean,
they had a big lead and all of a sudden it's
I mean, they have the same record as the Colts, but they have the tiebreaker. So yeah. Or no, did this get updated? No, this did not. Why isn't NFL.com updated? The heck, NFL.com.
I am happy to report that there are some NFL graphics being shown for playoff pictures in the NFC, and the Bears are still on the in the hunt graphic.
I mean, they are still in the hunt. It's just
They
really,
technically are. It's just it's still there.
yeah. All right. So the Jaguars are tied with the Colts and Texans at 8-7. So the Jaguars have something to play for. They better go get this done.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because they got, who do the Jags got left? They've got Panthers and Titans. So they've got two winnable games. They just got to go win those. Take it home, Jacksonville.
Particularly against the Panthers, that's really all I care about.
You beat the Panthers, it makes whatever happens, because I mean, if they win and the Bears go into that Packers game, the last game of the season, knowing they have the number one overall pick, because if Carolina goes into wins this coming week, and we have to go into the final weekend of the season against Green Bay, and having to watch the score of that Panthers game, see if they win or lose, like. My GI system can't take that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
It'll be a lot easier to take whatever happens in the Packers Bears game, knowing that we have the number one pick in our back pocket.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to get that done.
Oh, absolutely. Just get her done.
Get her done. Get her done.
Oh, we gotta talk about Cairo Santos.
Yeah, extension,
Warrior.
my man.
Yeah, you know what? He's earned it.
Yes,
Lock
he
him up.
has.
Lock him up. Make that be something you don't have to worry about. Because it's funny. Once you have a kicker that's kicking really well, you don't even think about the kicking game really. But when you have a kicker that's struggling, that becomes such a focal point. We think about, when the Bears went through their kicking struggles, it becomes such a debacle.
Remember in the 2019 offseason, all we thought we needed was a kicker because of the Cody Parkey stuff?
Yeah.
Remember how, like, that was in 2018, that was seemingly the weak link of that team. And we all saw how that happened and how it ended. I mean, it just, yeah.
I mean, going into this offseason, things change. Is biggest needs. I think we need a replacement for Eddie Jackson. We need a center. We need a wide
More wide
receiver
receiver
too.
weapons. Yep.
And then from there, like I think that's those are the holes. And Eddie Jackson, if you do bring him back, he's not worth that contract. I think it's you buy
Yeah,
yourself
yeah.
better. But if you need to bring him back, he was okay this season. So I mean, obviously you're glaring holes, center and wide receiver.
And I still think you could use some more pass rush depth and more on that line. I mean, things are
Oh
looking
yeah.
so much better on that line, but you'd need more depth to it. I mean, you really need depth anywhere in the NFL. You need more depth on the offensive line too.
But I'm talking, those are your glaring holes. Like you
Right,
got
right,
to,
right.
those you can't afford to not plug those. And then
Correct.
after that, edge rusher opposite Montez Sweat, you safety to replace Eddie Jackson, a move tight end to replace Robert Tonyan because he's been dog water.
Hey, he made a catch in this last game. Woohoo!
Yeah, so he's been abysmal. So Cole Kmet is a top five tight end in this league.
He has really grown on me. I feel like we've seen him take those steps we've wanted to be a number one tight end in this league, and he's becoming one, and I'm happy to see it. because I was really frustrated with him for a while, but we're really seeing those steps, and it's good to see.
You need that complimentary tight end.
Yes.
So he's that tight end that, so you know, your three tight ends are, you have the one that's just a glorified offensive lineman. That's your Mercedes Lewis. And I honestly, Mercedes Lewis has played pretty well this year. I would not be sad if they brought him back again.
No, neither would I. I know he's older, but if you bring him back for 1 year, I don't think you're doing yourself any harm.
You bring him back on 1 year deals, and you know, until either he can't play anymore or doesn't want to play anymore. He's been like, there has been nothing wrong with what he's done. And Cole Kmet is that guy that can block and catch passes, and he has been exceptional. And then you've got that tight end who's basically a big wide receiver, and it's supposed to be what Robert Tonyan is, and he's been ass. So you need that guy to really, you know, he's like your Sam Laporta from Detroit, like that kind of guy. You need a guy like that. That would be nice to have. Better depth along your offensive line. If you improved on left tackle over Braxton Jones, okay, there you go. You know, if you get another three technique, all right, those are all luxuries. You don't have that many glaring holes. And, you know, if you get some of these, and then from there, if you can plug those with early draft picks, all your late draft picks just become depth. And then you start drafting guys to grow into spots where you know you can't afford to pay anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, hey, you know, we know we're not going to pay, I don't know, this guy going forward, like Khalil Herbert. Okay, well, we drafted Roschon Johnson to be his replacement. Then when Roschon's going to be due a contract, we'll draft his replacement. But you don't have to, you know, you don't want to depend on a rookie. Draft him a little bit early in anticipation. And that's how you keep a good cap and keep a young team. So, you know, you're going into this draft and free agent period going, man, we don't have a ton of holes to fill. Honestly, I'm the Bears. I'm trying to upgrade at that center position, both through the draft and through a veteran, like an older veteran. That's just me.
Sure. No, I get that.
Because if that guy you drafted doesn't pan out, man, you are in trouble. I think you need a veteran.
Yep.
Because
centers
can play for a long time. You know, and usually the best ones are over 30 years old. So you could pull a guy in for a 1 or 2 year deal, draft somebody. All right, cool.
And draft somebody that's not a sixth or seventh rounder.
Right. You draft somebody that, you know, honestly, your best centers are going to go in late second, early third.
Mm-hmm.
Use your third round draft pick on one. You got two firsts. You don't, you know, you can use that. You don't have a second, but if you trade back, you might be able to get another second and plug your holes. So, you know, if you got yourself in a wide receiver and a edge rusher in the first round and got brought back a second rounder too, you draft your future safety, and then that third rounder you draft your center, and you're like, okay, hey, there we go, pay Jalen Johnson. You got to pay the man.
Yeah, I mean, he's balling out.
You fudged up when you didn't sign him to an extension early on. Now you're paying.
Fudge.
But he's been a dude.
He's earning his paycheck. He really is.
Yeah. So you pay that dude.
And it's hard to find replacement talent like that. And I know there's been concerns about injuries in the past, but this year he's really, really balled out.
Yeah. Where do you want to go from here?
Well, we have the Blackhawks who pulled the Bears the other night. But hey, Connor Bedard still looks amazing. You see that Michigan goal he scored?
That goal, whenever you score a goal that has Wayne Gretzky talk about how great it was, that's something. But this team is dog doo doo, and I don't know what else to say other than
The
that
joys of rebuilding?
Arvid Soderblom is that guy. You've got to build up his confidence. He is just toast when he goes out there.
It's not looking good. I mean, you had a 5-2 lead with 10, what was it, 10, 15 minutes to go in the third period, and then you end up losing 7-5. That was, I know we're not trying to win games this year necessarily, but that was like really. It hurt a lot more because it was against the team you dislike the most.
I just like the Red Wings the most, but
I'm going with the Blues, far and away.
over the Red Wings right now or in overall in your whole life?
Right now, I mean, the Red
Oh,
Wings
okay.
aren't even
Yeah.
in our division anymore. They're,
Fair
you
right now,
know.
but I just, man, that hatred is brewed for a long time. So I, even if they're not in the same division, I still always going to be a Red Wings hater.
Yeah, I dislike the Blues so much more these days. Ever since 2014, let's say that.
But man, this Blackhawks team is so devoid of talent.
Especially with all these injuries. I mean, so, you know, Corey Perry's gone. Taylor Hall's out for the year. Efenisiu's been out. Seth Jones has been banged up a bit. And then, you know, you're wasn't somebody else just got hurt, right? Wasn't Dickinson, wasn't it somebody else got hurt, but I mean, they're just calling up guys from Rockford at this point, and it's just ugh, you weren't a good team as it was. You might have been a scrappy, fairly competitive one that was still not going to win a lot of games, but now you're just down to a lot of minor league options right now. And Mrazek is clearly the better goaltender right now. And it's going to get real ugly the rest of the way, but we can enjoy watching Connor Bedard play.
Yeah, it's getting tough. I mean, obviously you watch and you're like, man, every time he does good stuff, and early on in his career, he's a point a game player at 18 years old. That's pretty awesome. But man, it's earlier in the season, you're like, oh, okay, I can this still enjoyable even if they're losing because you're seeing the growth. You're not seeing the growth anywhere else, really. You're still, you need, the veterans being hurt or not playing well has really stunted some of the growth that we've seen for the younger players. And I don't know what you do about it at this point.
I mean, at this point, you just kind of ride things out the way they are. By the way, it was Joey Anderson that also got hurt. That's who it was.
Okay.
He was placed on IR like 2 weeks ago, a little less than 2 weeks ago. But, you know, you kind of look at what's been going on. It's like you have Kaiser up and down. You know, Tenorti was hurt for some time. There's been a lot of roster carousel going on here.
Yeah, but like this was supposed to be the year that Connor Bedard and Lucas Reichel took these big steps.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Lucas Reichel, it's been pretty disappointing. I feel like we've seen some better things so far, but it's still not from him, but it's still not nearly where you would hope it would be. I think that's probably the most disappointing thing so far in terms of an individual performance. Because, you know, I mean, Connor Bedard's living up to his name. You know, Kevin Korchinski is showing inexperience, but you're seeing flashes there. Obviously, yeah. Arvid Soderblom could be the other one you could argue is the most disappointing, but a lot of the other guys, like, well, you just got veterans in here, and, you know, that is what it is. And you know, Taylor Hall got hurt, so what are you going to do about it? It's not performance-based. It's just, it's getting hurt.
Yeah, and, you know, Korchinski was gone for a while because of his father passing.
Yep.
You know, so he's just coming back. But again, he's 19 years old. But, you know, you've seen some nice things from him. He's obviously an NHL player. Just going to have to grow into his body. So, yeah, the Korchinski and Bedard, those are bright spots. But at this point, I don't know what you do. You can't. Do you, you know, before the trade deadline, do you consider trying to add some players that are decent, that a team is looking to dump their salary and take on
if
that
they're
money?
Controllable. Because trading for a guy for the rest of the year wouldn't make any sense to me.
I mean, I just...
Unless you're giving up something, like, if you're just giving, like, cash.
Yeah.
Or, like...
Basically buying a player or,
right.
Or getting a draft pick for taking on that money.
Right. That yeah, that works, too. That works, too.
Like, just to stop the bleeding, losing... Like being able to get the number one pick again would be awesome. But you don't want to keep, at some point, these young players got to learn to win. And, you know, the chance to draft Macklin Celebrini is not worth just having these young players just get their asses kicked every night.
Thanks for Celebrini.
You know. So you've got to get these kids to start playing better and give them some veteran leadership. And so you've got cap room. So if you can bring in an expiring contract, or it's a player that you're like, you know what, we could use them next year, and you take on that contract and you get a pick for it, go for it. And the earlier, the better. Because the trade deadline's stupid late for the NHL. And it's funny, we shit all over it when you're, oh man, the trade deadline's so early, man, it should be later. But then when it's later, you're like, why is it so late?
I think baseball has it right with the trade deadline. I really do. I think it's way too early in the NFL. I think it's a little late in the NHL. But I think when it comes to baseball, they have that trade deadline right.
Yeah, I could agree with that. But let's see, what are you, 33 games? So you're coming up on halfway point of the season.
Yeah. I just, you know, we talked about this before, the rest of the way, this probably might be the least talented we are outside Bedard during this whole ordeal. Cause you still had last year, you had veterans, including Kane and Taze. And even though they're at the end of the rope, especially Taze, you know, there was more that you had, because you also had guys like Max Domi, who you ended up trading away, who had a really good year. So, and you had a healthy Andres Athanasiou, who had a solid year. And, you know, right now you don't have any of that.
Right. You know, so. It is what it is at this point. You know, it would be nice to have Domi back. That would have been nice.
Yeah, I think he wanted to sign with a winner, but I wanted him back for sure. I don't really have much else to say. There's not much to say.
Did you see that NHL 24, the game, did a career simulation for Connor Bedard?
The recent one or the one they did pre-draft or right around the draft, or was it the draft or was it
It was
the
this one.
lottery?
This was a new one. They did it.
Oh, okay.
Career 844 goals, 1,107 assists, 1,951 total points, five Rocket Richard, six Art Ross, five Hart trophies. Three Conn Smythes and three Stanley Cups.
Nice.
If that's what we get, I'm pretty happy.
I am too. I am too. And I mean, he is just showing the makings of a generational player, and it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, I'm trying to see where that would be on the points, all-time points.
Wouldn't be Gretzky in terms of points.
1951 would be number two.
Because the number one is Gretzky.
Number one is Gretzky. You'd be way
Yeah.
behind Gretzky,
No one's
but
catching that.
no. Those assists numbers are just me. Jaromír Jágr played for 400 years and is still, and he's number two on points all time. But he's still 800 plus assists behind.
That's wild.
Yeah, he played 250 more games. So this would 700 or 1,107 assists would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seventh all time in assists and goals, 844 would be number two, depending on what Alex Ovechkin does. So either two or three, and then it would be number two overall in points. Ridiculous. So ridiculous. I'm here for it though. I got a Connor Bedard jersey for Christmas.
I got a jersey, a black one, a black Bedard jersey. I think a lot of Chicagoans got Bedard gear for Christmas.
Oh, I'm sure. I was talking to somebody at the Blackhawk store, the one on Michigan Avenue, and I was like, "What's the ratio of Bedard jersey sold to anybody else?" And he goes, "Oh, it's we sell way more Bedard jerseys than anybody else combined."
I mean, shouldn't be a surprise at all.
Yeah, he told me that Hossa is actually number two.
Oh, okay. I mean, hey, he's the first Hall of Famer of that dynasty group.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you're like, oh, okay. You know who he is. And you know his legacy, it's already cemented, and that's that. It's not like you, oh, I'm gonna get this player and then he fizzles out or gets traded or signs somewhere else, a free agent.
Yeah, I mean,
Jerseys are expensive,
they
so
are. They are.
the fact that you're spending this money. I'm pretty much done NFL jerseys until a player is, establishes themselves or hangs it up. I'll get a retired player, like a Walter Payton, you know who he is. You get a
Got a
Devin
Gale
Hester.
Sayers.
Yeah, Gale Sayers, you know who he is. Devin Hester, you know who he is. Like I've got a Walter Payton one, I've got a Devin Hester one.
I got my Maddox.
So it's you gotta pick and choose these. Can't, I bought a Justin Fields jersey, and we're gonna see how that goes long term, but all right, you wanna talk a little Bulls here?
Sure.
Wrap it up with baseball.
Sure, yeah. They've been pretty fun to watch overall. Unfortunately, they really flopped against Cleveland the other night. And here they are playing the Atlanta Hawks. I'll be in attendance for their upcoming game against the Pacers. And, Coby White continues to be a dude. I think Patrick Williams is playing a bit better.
Quite a bit better.
I mean, compared to where he was at the beginning of the year, where I'd pretty much given up on him. But hey, Andre Drummond's having a nice night so far.
Well,
And through the first half,
Vooch is out.
he is, yes. So he had to step in. I'm just gonna kind of see where this goes, honestly. Again, blah game the other night against Cleveland at home. You hope they can rebound here tonight against the Hawks. So by the time you're listening to this, this game will be over. So either they rebounded against the Hawks or they lost another one. But they're down by 9 right now. It's just after the half, so we'll see how it goes. But
You know, I mean the elephant in the room about the Bulls, obviously, is Zach LaVine. And I know that he didn't want to get traded initially. And I think he's okay with it now. And the expectation is, both sides kind of want to move on. I just don't know, what do you get for him? I mean, it's almost seeming at this point like a salary dump. You're not getting anything for him. And that's a tough pill to swallow, that you've got a player that's an elite scorer and he's just going to be gone.
And I will still contend that giving him the money at the time was you either paid him the max or you were just losing him for nothing. And I think they were put in a corner where they had to pay him.
Remember when we were like, oh, should the Bulls pay Jimmy Butler the max money? And they didn't. They traded him. And Jimmy needed to figure out who Jimmy was because he went to Minnesota and wasn't the dude. Went to Philadelphia, wasn't quite the dude. It wasn't the dude until he went to the Heat. And then he became a dude. And you knew he was an elite defender. Could he be that elite scorer? And you saw flashes, but not consistency. And it took him a while to figure that out. And with Zach, I don't know if you can take this guy with a scorer mentality and driving the basket mentality that needs to be a volume ball handler and put him in this offense to make it click. I don't know. I just don't know if that's the case. And the argument could be, you keep him and then you pony up the money and become, the Bulls are one of the bottom teams as far as if you take away the Lonzo Ball contract because he's not playing. If you take that $20 million off of their books, like they're one of the lower teams as far as team salary goes. Just pony up the money and try to get another superstar to pair with him.
That would be nice. It's nice to think about, but
Your
when it
option?
comes to the Bulls, a lot of our dreams don't come true.
No, because we had terrible ownership. So the options are you either dump him for nothing, and then you've got salary cap relief for next year. I don't know what you do with it. Who wants to come here? Or you pony up the money and try to build around him. But the thing is, we're probably going to have some sort of third option that's, well, we couldn't trade him, and so eventually he's going to come back. We're not going to pony up money to build around him. And so we're just going to be a perennial nine, that team that's too good to get a lottery pick, a good lottery pick, and too bad to be competitive in the playoffs. We're just like an irrelevant team. You know, we saw Wemby come to town.
And you see the picture of him and Connor Bedard.
Crazy story is that was at the Blackhawks practice facility. My best friend's son was on the ice while that was happening. And
really?
Yeah. So they had to sign waivers for both the NHL and NBA because they were like photograph, like those we used as promotional photographs for both. So they had to sign waivers.
That's funny.
And it's funny. So like my friend's son is my daughter's age. Well, he's a couple months younger. He's about to turn 9. And one of the players on his team goes, "Are they brothers?" And I don't know which would be the more obvious reason to point out why Connor Bedard and Victor Wembanyama aren't brothers, but there's at least three solid ways you could tell that they're not brothers.
Yeah, right.
I mean, one is black, one is 19 feet taller than the other one, and one has a French accent.
Les Français.
But yeah, Wemby came to town, and you saw like what bringing a young elite player to your team can do. And you watch some of the things that that guy does, and you're like, man, he's going to be a problem at some point in this league.
Oh yeah. I mean, Wemby's really good. He just needs a team around him.
Yeah, but I mean, he's a little bit of a baby giraffe. You know, I think you saw similar things with Giannis early in his career. Like, okay, this guy's really good. And he sort of came into his body and then became a dude. And Wembanyama is at some point, he's already really good. And when you let him come into his own in that body, he's going to be a real problem because you have a guy that could drive the lane, is 7.5 feet tall, could spot up and shoot a three over you and dominate you. Like, what do you do? How do you stop that guy?
You know what my question for Wembanyama is? How much does that kid have to eat?
Yeah, honestly, you remember Michael Phelps, the swimmer?
Oh, yeah. His calorie intake was like astronomical.
Yeah, it was like 10,000 calories a day to maintain that weight.
Yeah.
You're like, Jesus Christ. Like, if I ate 10,000 calories a day, I would be 400 pounds.
Right. And I mean, you know, with Wembanyama, you know, he's a tall, lanky guy. He's going to want to build more strength and muscle as he plays in this league. So I can only imagine what he's going to have to eat. You just, there's a buffet table that's literally just reserved for Victor Wembanyama. It's like, you have a whole buffet table for him. Isn't that going to go to waste? No, it's all going to get eaten. And this is a daily occurrence.
Wembanyama. All right, should we wrap this up talking a little baseball?
Sure.
All right. Crickets, 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 crickets. There's nothing happening.
Oh, no, 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 no. Something happened today in Chicago.
Did somebody get signed to a minor league deal?
The White Sox have signed 37-year-old Martin Maldonado.
Oh, my God. That is such a White Sox move. Oh, that is such a White Sox move. Martin Maldonado. I mean, I don't hate it. But that's building from the bottom up. That's, you know, he's a back end of the roster kind of guy. So I still wonder who's pitching to him.
Eric Fide. I don't know. Tuki Toussaint. I don't know if Dylan Cease is going to be there.
I don't think he's going to be.
You know, yeah, I feel like it's more likely than not he gets traded. It's just who's going to pay? Where are they going to find the agreement?
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, don't be surprised if the Dodgers don't bring him in.
I wouldn't be. They got the prospect capital. they're getting everybody they want. They got freaking Yamamoto now.
Yeah.
They're in on everybody.
Yeah, I mean, if they brought
Can't
in Dylan
Cease,
that would be tough for the rest of the league.
Yeah, no kidding.
But I mean, that it makes sense, is, you know, because they're probably not bringing back Kershaw.
I wonder where he'll end up.
I bet he retires.
You think?
I think so.
Maybe.
You know, so you've got to replace roster rotation guys. So Dylan Cease fit in there real nice.
He would. You join Yamamoto in that rotation, and then you have Tyler Glass now. That's a healthy rotation. That's going to be pretty tough to beat. And Dylan Cease doesn't really need to have the pressure of being the ace. Like, he can be your really good two or three, depending on where you slate in Tyler Glass now.
Yeah. I mean,
if Tyler Glass now is even healthy.
But yeah, I mean, that's it makes sense, because the Dodgers, like, it's not a, he's not making any money. So you just trading some from your overflowing, you know, minor league pool, and you get a cost effective guy to balance out your bajillion dollar players. That Yamamoto contract is stupid.
Yeah. 12 years, 300 plus million plus the signing fee on top of that.
If he ends up being really good, then that's actually a pretty good contract. But if he's not, if he's just like okay or doesn't pan out, that is brutal.
High risk, high reward.
Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. And it's funny because, you know, the Cubs acted like they were crippled from the Jason Hayward $184 million contract. And Dodgers are like, that's just chump change to us.
Yeah, that's nothing. They're doing whatever they want here.
Yeah. They're playing in the Matrix.
But you know what? I'm glad we're not in their division. And Captain Variance can take over in the postseason. So nothing's ever guaranteed, but boy, is that team going to be tough to beat.
On the Cubs front, the Blue Jays signed center fielder Kevin Kiermaier, which probably puts them out of bringing in Bellinger.
Maybe. I mean, I know Bob Nightingale said that they could still be in on him, but that might be Boris speaking to try to get that value. Because I feel like somebody is going to pop in for Bellinger that's not the Cubs to try to get him. Maybe it's San Francisco. Maybe it's someone we just completely don't know.
I don't think it's going to be San Francisco, because they just got the Korean guy.
Right, but who's their first baseman?
I mean, that's the thing, is everybody's bringing him in as, like, the Blue Jays, if they brought him in, they would be bringing him in at first base.
And then there was talks of, like, freaking Vladdy moving to third. It's like, okay, good luck with that.
No, Vlad, yeah, that's not going to happen. I still think the Cubs are the front runner to get Bellinger.
Probably,
but,
right.
But it's not, I bet it's, it's the years that they're disagreeing on. I bet they're saying 6 years max.
I wonder if we're going to see opt-outs.
I think that's going to be the compromise. Is the Cubs saying, yeah, shorter years, but with opt-outs. Because it's obviously, when you're the player, you know, you hire Boris for a reason. So you don't just hire him because you want to stay in one place. You want to get the most money. It's what he does. It's his expertise. If you're just trying to get a friendly deal and re-sign with your club and spend your career there, you don't need Boris. You don't go Boris. That's just like not a Boris thing. You just, any other agent. But this, you sign Boris because you want the most money. So this is going to come down to is, and maybe this is Jed being smart and letting the market sort of play out rather than just jump in and spend a ton of money. Because if you were like, all right, here's 10 years, $300 million, and signed him right away, I guess you could afford to do that because you're the Cubs and you make money. But if you're trying to be competitive and bring in multiple people, maybe it's smarter to let this play out and not bid against yourself and wait till some players are, Dodgers are out, Yankees are out. Like there's only a handful of teams that spend big money. You're not worried about the Royals swooping in and stealing Bellinger from you. You're not worried about the White Sox coming and stealing him. You're slowly peeling away the teams that can afford to spend. You've used the Red Sox probably aren't going to go for him. That's another spender. So it's the and it's looking like the Blue Jays are less likely, and the Giants are less likely. So that's really thinning out who's got the money to pay him what he wants. Not saying it
Yeah.
guarantees anything. It just it's
There's promising signs, obviously.
yeah.
And, Bellinger seemed to really like it here. It's what just makes this more complicated is knowing the agent you're dealing with.
And like I said, is Jed has a good working relationship with Boris. They're not adversarial. It just Boris is going to try to get the most money, and Jed is going to try to get, sign him for the least years. So it's they're just going to have to find that midway point. But the less big money players are in the race, the better it is for the Cubs. Because if the Cubs are competing against the Reds or are competing against, the Brewers, like they can blow those teams out of the water with money and the city and, but it's the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Blue Jays and the Giants that you struggle to compete financially. I mean, not struggle, but those are teams that can compete with you toe to toe with dollars. So it's at this point now you're running out of those big spending teams, and it's we'll see where this goes. I mean, I guess that's the key linchpin, I guess, at this point for if you're the Cubs.
Yeah, absolutely. I know there's a lot of restlessness out there because they haven't committed any guaranteed money yet this off season, but most of what's out there is still on the board. And you gotta be patient, but you also gotta wonder when things are gonna start to happen because we waited for the Ohtani stuff, that's over. We waited for the Yamamoto stuff, that's over. Now Cody Bellinger is far and away the biggest free agent on the board.
Yeah, I mean, and I know I'm personally getting all anxious and like, when are they going to do something? When are they going to do something? But other than the Dodgers, like, not a lot of, I mean, the Yankees made a trade, but like, it's been pretty slow. I mean, like, you look through the news, the signings, and there's just not a lot going on. So it's at some point you're gonna see somebody sign, and then the ball's gonna get rolling. But January is probably where you're gonna see stuff, because you want to get guys signed before pitchers and catchers report in early to mid-February. So January is the time when you'll start seeing guys start to go.
Right.
But you look at the ranking the top free agents, and there's still quite a few of them left.
Yeah, I mean, you got Rhys Hoskins out there. You have Blake Snell out there. You have Jordan Montgomery. Just to name a few.
Yeah, so it's there's just a lot of guys still available, and you know you just got to be patient a little bit and let this play out. Like I said, the Yankees aren't going to be big spenders, I don't think. They traded for a guy. But you know, Blake Snell still available. Bellinger still available. Josh Hader still available.
And he's been linked to the Cubs. I don't know if the Cubs are really going to do it, but if there's a reliever out there, I think the Cubs could get fairly easily. That's Brett Suter, who used to be on the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah. Chapman still available, Soler still available. Most of the top 50 ranked free agents are still available.
Yeah, so plenty left on the board. You had two historic outliers in Yamamoto and Ohtani, and those are over and done with now. And the Cubs were never in on Yamamoto. That
No.
seems more than clear.
Yeah, that and obviously they might have been all in on Ohtani, but Ohtani was never all in on the Cubs. So,
Two historic outliers is what I say.
yeah, just absolute. So now it's the market is set back to normal mode, and we go from there. I mean, outside of the outliers, was Aaron Nola the biggest free agent signing? And that was just a re-sign.
Yeah, and that happened really early.
Yeah, that happened quick. So, we're seeing it a bit slow. But in the next couple of weeks, you're going to see all these names start to sign. And the Cubs are still in on this. They're still going to spend money. I'm talking to myself as much as I'm talking to everybody else, is having the Cubs go out and bring in such a big manager and pay him so much money, you're not going to be chintzy and cheap on your roster. You want to give this guy players that can compete and play well.
Yeah, exactly.
They Jed made it a major point to say that they were playing to win. There's no consolation prizes. They're playing to win. And the manager they signed pointed that. So they gotta be in on this. Just gotta be smart how they do it. But I'm sure there's a roadmap that didn't have Ohtani on it. And I'm sure that was the most likely one. 29 teams aren't getting Shohei Ohtani. You have to have a path forward after that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that can't be your plan A and only A, obviously. And I don't think it is. And, obviously, I think that they're still going to spend a decent amount of money this offseason. It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, and honestly, the fact that Ohtani signed like pretty early,
Could you imagine if this dragged into 2024?
oh yeah, if this dragged into late January, like that would be tough.
But it wasn't going to because he wanted to be in LA all along. It was just ironing out the details and getting some leverage to get the contract that his people wanted.
Yeah, so the fact that he was early. Yamamoto's fairly early. It just goes, okay, there we are. All the cards are on the table. We know where we're at now.
Right.
So I don't know. I would imagine Bellinger's going to be, I don't think he's going to be next of the bigger free agents. I think they're going to kind of drag that one.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, we could see it being dragged into December, February, if that happened. And you know, maybe it surprises us, but I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm gonna say it's gonna be like the third week of January. So like 3.5 weeks from now, 3, 4 weeks from now, that's when he's gonna sign. 'Cause I don't think he's gonna want to go into training camp not knowing where he's going.
Right. Hey, did you hear? Breaking news. The Pistons have now lost 27 straight games.
That team is so like they should not be this bad.
No, they shouldn't. I mean, look at all the talent that they drafted over the past few years around Cade. I mean, that's, you know, we weren't expecting them to be that good, but this is historic.
Yeah, this team is bad. I don't how do you lose? Like, you have to accidentally win a game in there at some point.
Right. I mean, you see the worst of teams find ways to win games. I mean, they've got two wins, and it's December 26th. It's the day after Christmas.
It is terrible. Like, I'm looking at the like San Antonio is bad and they have twice as many wins.
This is a league record for losses in a row.
And you know what's crazy is the Pistons started 2-1.
Their last win was when they beat the crap out of us the night that Zach scored what, 50, 51 points?
And that was before Halloween.
Yes.
They were one basket away from starting off 3-0. How hilarious would that have been, starting off 3-0 and then losing this many straight?
So that one basket was the difference between being 3-0 and being competitive to setting a new NBA record for consecutive losses. How
Ugh.
about that?
And the Bulls right now on Tankathon are have the 10 worst odds or 10 best odds for getting the number one pick.
Hooray.
I ran like 10 simulations and they were never in the top three.
Mwah, mwah,
Wah,
mwah,
wah.
which does not surprise me at all.
No. That's they're in purgatory.
And now the Pistons fans are getting onto the bandwagon that we have heard here in Chicago with a certain chant. You know what that chant is?
What?
Sell the team.
Okay, yeah, the White Sox chant. Yeah, and they're not going to. And the crazy part is like I don't know who's in this draft that's like elite that's gonna take you to the next level.
No. I don't know if we talked about this on our last show or not, but did you see the promo that Wingstop has with them, with the
No.
Pistons? So the Pistons have a promo where, like, if they win, then, like, you know, fans get that go to the game, they get like 5 free boneless wings. So that's a pretty nice promotion, right?
Yeah.
But Wingstop's probably laughing their butts off, thinking, hey, we haven't had to give away any free wings.
All your wings are belong to us.
Okay, so here's the promo. It's the official wings of the Detroit Pistons. When the Pistons win, enjoy 5 free boneless wings with any online wins purchase via code Pistons. So they got a win for you to use your code to get the wings. And for all you SpongeBob lovers out there is this hilarious meme of from season one of SpongeBob when Squidward is burning the Krabby Patties when SpongeBob ditches to play hooky and the customers are lining up yelling, We're hungry. Look at us. We haven't eaten in so long. And it literally replaces Squidward with the Detroit Pistons logo. And it has a picture of that promotion at the bottom.
I saw a thing on Instagram Reels today. Is you've seen the live action Grinch movie, right?
Oh, yeah. I grew up with that. That was my childhood. That was
See,
one of the earliest memories I had going to the movie theater.
I grew up with the cartoon, but the you know
I
where
love the
he's he,
cartoon too.
where he's looking at the list, he's like, hate, 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 hate.
It
There was a Bears edition, and it just kept going, and it was like, you know, it showed Matt Nagy, it showed Luke Getsy, it showed Cade McNown, and it just and then it said the Packers and the Lions, and they just hate, double hate, hate, hate.
hate, 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 loathe entirely.
It was just it was hilarious, the Bears edition. All right, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Nope, I think I've said my piece.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com, or ShyFanPat2 for Alex on Twitter /X, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. Until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on planes.
Bears 31 to negative 7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...